Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
From 104.5 The Zone, an hour of talk about sports, Nashville, and more with Ned Michaels and Bob Mueller. Phone lines are open at 615-737-1045. This is Michaels and Mueller, presented by Franklin American Mortgage Company on 104.5 The Zone.
And a very good evening to you out here in Nashville. This is Michaels and Mueller, although neither of them are here today.
Where,
I actually, we don't know where they are.
I have no idea.
Joe Leadingham filling in for Bob. Chris Sanders.
What's up, man? How we doing, bro?
Tennessee Titans receiver.
Man, you make me sound old. Former.
We just talked about your age before the show started. You're not that old.
I am. I'll be 47 this year.
See, it's nice that you admit
I'm still kind of pretty, though. I mean,
you're still a good-looking guy.
100%. There you go.
But we were guiding the ship today.
Let's do it, man.
How long? It's been a while since we sat down.
Man, well, every time we do something, we talk about something crazy. I mean, always, but it makes it fun.
Something good.
You know, we start on something and we stay there, but we're going to have a good time, bro.
I want to know if Bob or Ned are going to call in. So we really don't know. Like,
we
don't know where they are, to be honest, but we're happy to be here.
If you see the stash, let us know.
Yeah. You can see him. You can see him on news, too.
I love the stash.
Yeah. Bob's the man. Chris.
Yes, sir.
We touched about it before the show. We're talking about NFL today, obviously.
Shoot, we can talk about NFL.
Drafts coming up here. I can't believe, I was telling you, the other day I was around town and someone told me that there was going to be like over 100,000 people here for the draft. And I'm
No. I heard like close to 600,000 to 700,000.
What?
Seriously.
Ryan A. Mudd, is that what? 600,000 to 700,000?
100,000 ain't nothing. Just imagine when they had their unveiling of the uniforms. What, 60 or 70 alone from that?
I guess so. Let me tell you this. This city doesn't have the infrastructure to support 600,000.
But you got to remember, the marathon's going to be going on that.
Yeah, I know. They got the marathon, yeah.
If the Preds make it to the, I mean, do a good job deep in the playoffs, they might have some games here.
It's April, so.
Yeah.
I guess that'd be the start.
It'd be the start. So you just never know. A lot of good stuff's going to be coming on.
I'm not ready. But yeah, speaking of the Preds, let's kick off with that a little bit. One thing I wanted to touch on is the absolute panic mode that everybody is in the city right now. Oh, the Preds don't look good. And here's what I'm going to say about that. I don't care about how they look right now in the regular season. I just don't. Mm-hmm. And I say that because they went all the way to the Stanley Cup 2 years ago as the 8 seed. Mm-hmm. Last year they won the President's Trophy and neither led to a cup, but I think they know what they're doing now. And my question for you is, this is what I think, I'm not going to say there's a lack of motivation because I think all these guys, I used to cover a lot of these guys, they're all motivated, but I feel like they know that when the playoffs come around, then they're going to turn it on. That's what I think
is
going to happen.
That is a no-no.
Okay, all right, well, then tell me why.
You can't do that. I'm just going to go back. I'm going to kind of put it in football tense. You remember the year where we were 13-3?
Yeah.
We had a bye.
Yeah.
I think this is in year 2000 when Baltimore won it. We felt good. We're like, okay, we got a week off. Baltimore was playing good ball at that time. We had a weekend off, and we're thinking, okay, we can just turn it on. You can't do that. You got to play good hockey throughout. And the reason why I say that is because the team that's going to win the cup is the team that's going to be hot. And I just think that the Predators have to do that.
And listen, I don't disagree with you because I try to remind people, look, when they did go to the cup final, they were the 8 seed and barely, squeaked their way into the playoffs. But I just think that there's a lot of overreaction to this team not playing well. But they're only 3 points behind Winnipeg. Yeah. For the Central Division title. So as bad as you might think they're playing, they're still on the hunt for a division champion.
I just think at the beginning of the season, the expectations were so high.
I agree with that, too.
I mean, that's what it is. I mean, if we had low expectations, then we wouldn't be saying this. I think everybody's expecting them to win. I mean, they have the talent. They have Subban. They have Pekka. They have Forsberg, Hosey. All these stars – We want to see the Stars play well, and I just think they've been inconsistent in the last couple of weeks.
I think that everybody saw them go to the Cup as the 8th seed, and there's a misconception that
it's not.
Say, well, if they win as an 8th seed, why can't they do it?
But here's they were here's playing well at that time.
You know, and here's the interesting thing about hockey, which I mean, you can ask any of these guys, and I think the hockey more than any other sport, you get in, you've got a legit got shot a to chance. Win. How many times have the lower seeds advanced to the Stanley Cup? I don't have the numbers for the final. I don't have the numbers in front of me. But it's a good amount.
Yep. I mean, look at when they were the AC coming in a couple of years ago. They had nothing to lose, and they were playing good hockey. And when you're playing good hockey at that time, you put yourself in position to win. Right now, if they start playing bad, I mean, if they keep playing bad hockey right now or later on down the road and they get into the playoffs, then I'll have a concern because you can't go in playing bad hockey going into the playoffs. You just can't do it.
Yeah, they got 21 games to go.
That's still a lot of games.
So yeah, I mean, they have a quarter of the season left. And again, I just the absolute panic button that people are hitting. I predicted them to win the Cup this year, and I still think they're going to do it. I did that after they lost in 2016. I said they will not win the Cup the following year. They will win this year.
See, that's what happened with us with the Tennessee Titans. When we first moved into our stadium, we went to the Super Bowl. The next year following that, we went 13-3. So now you have all these losing seasons. The expectation is so high.
It's enormous.
It's enormous. Yeah. So I just think that with the Predators, you know, have a chance to win the Cup last year, and this year we're expecting them to hold that Cup up. I just think it's disappointing because they're playing bad hockey at this time.
Yeah, I think they'll get a lot better, though.
They
really
will. They'll be fine.
I stand by it. I still think they're going to win the Cup this year. I think they're going to win it all this year. I said it. I said it 2 years ago. I'm standing by it. I still think they're going to win the Cup this year.
Yeah, and then also, you know, early in the season, a lot of their stars were hurt.
Yeah, I mean,
we got to put that. And they're just getting back, especially Subban. Subban, how you pronounce his name?
PK Subban.
PK Subban. I can make sure I pronounced it right. PK Subban. But he was hurt a little bit of the season, so I just think he's getting his wind back. I think he's getting his skating legs back. So I think he's going to be all right. So when you have your stars playing well at the right time, it puts yourself in position to win.
I agree. I think it's all about depending on how you end the season out. Now, look, if they go into the season on like a 10-game or in the playoffs on a 10-game losing streak.
Oh, now let's panic.
Then I'll start to get a little concerned. But right now, I mean, it's crazy to see how like the expectations for these guys have just elevated so high. And to me, I'm just kind of like, you know, I've seen so many hockey teams just get into the playoffs and teams come out of nowhere. So I think they've got a talented roster again. I said I think they're going to win it this year, and I think all they have to do is get in it, and I think they're going to figure it out, and they'll be fine. I think last year the expectations are really high. They won the President's Trophy for the first time. That doesn't really end up working out well for a lot of teams. Mm-hmm. I think that this year feel like they're going to be more even keel in the postseason, and they'll be in a lot better position to go deep.
Again. Yeah, and also to factor in it also, you know, last couple of years, they were hunting teams. Now they're the ones being hunted. That makes a big difference because you got to remember when the Predators get on the ice, the teams are like, okay, we know you went to the Cup last year. Sure. They're going to play their best hockey.
Sure.
So that's what we got to understand.
I think if you're a player in the league, you know what you're going against with the roster. You know what kind of roster you're up against.
Yeah, so. I mean, look at what the Tennessee Titans did to New England Patriots this year.
Yeah, sure. Oh, yeah.
Because when you hear that the Patriots are coming to Nissan
Stadium,
you amp up
a bit.
It's just a different feel. You know, you're going to come out, you're going to play your best football, you're going to run your best route, you're going to play more physical because it's the New England Patriots. The same thing with the Predators. Now you're respected around the country now, so teams are going to play you even tough.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think the franchise has totally shifted, like you're saying.
Want it like that.
Yeah, you do, over the course of, you know, 2 years.
Want it like that.
Before we'll move on from hockey. Sure. I just wanted to get that out of the way because I just think people are just way too.
Love you, Brink.
And in this day and age of social media, the overreaction.
Overreaction.
I just love it. NFL draft though, you excited?
Woo! Come on. Who you think we're gonna get in the first pick? What you got?
And you know what? I don't know.
I have no idea.
Here's the deal, okay? Yeah. I've thought they've needed this for a few years. Now they did address it.
Right.
With Harold Landry last year, I don't mind them taking another edge rusher.
But who's going to be there? I mean,
exactly.
It's some top dogs that are going to be there. Just imagine, you know, the luxury that Clemson has. They're going to have four or five guys going in the top 15 picks. So I think they're going to have a guy that's there. The one guy that I like is the guy from Mississippi State, the one who just got hurt.
Okay.
Edge rusher. I think it's Jeffrey Simmons or something like that.
Yeah.
But he's a monster. So let me ask you this question. If you're J-Rob, you're sitting at the third or fourth round. You know that he got hurt, and he's sitting there. Would you grab him?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I would grab him.
I mean, I think these guys are smarter than I am about draft picks. Right. Well, maybe some of them aren't because Tom Brady went where he went, and there's a lot of guys that slip. But no, J-Rob knows his stuff when it comes to draft. There's no doubt. I mean, he's in his job for a reason. I'll say this. I wouldn't be surprised if, look, the draft's in Nashville, make a splash. He's nicknamed Trader John. Do you think he might make a deal to move up the board a little bit? I mean, who knows?
I think the key is whoever they draft, he can't just be another guy. He just can't. He's got to be a Javon Curse.
A game wrecker.
You got to be a guy that you feel on the field. And when I say a guy that you feel on the field, that he's always around the ball. When Javon Curse came in the building, you knew something was special about him. When he practiced, you saw him do special things. When he was in the game, he changed the game. If you look at when we were in the playoffs in 1999 and we played against Buffalo, he made about three or four plays that changed the game when he sacked Johnson in the end zone to get 2 points.
Yeah.
We need a guy like that. Landry, we thought he was going to be that guy.
He had a decent season.
He had a decent season, but...
He'd be better.
We don't need no more decent seasons.
right. And you know what? Maybe he takes a big leap in year two. I actually, you know what? Side note, I want to ask you this as an offensive player. Every time, how important are sacks in devastating a drive for a team?
I mean, it puts the offense in a disadvantage.
Yeah.
As opposed to being 3rd and 2, now it's 3rd and 16 and 3rd and 17. Because you got to remember, the quarterback is dropping back maybe a 3-step, a 5-step, or a 7-step. Just imagine if he takes a 7-step drop, you come off the edge, you sack him, as opposed to now being 3rd and 2, now it's 3rd and 15, 4th and 15.
They're drive killers, essentially.
Yeah, drive killers. Yeah, yeah. Oh, no.
I would love to see the percentages of what a sack translates into ending
huge.
A drive. We have a call early. Kevin from Franklin has got something on an Edmonton hockey sack. Kevin, what's up, man? How you doing?
Pretty good, guys. I just heard y'all talking about hockey at first and talking about 8 seeds. And, of course, we were the first 16th seed with the new format to ever make the finals. But Edmonton in 2006 is the only 8-seeded team that has ever reached the finals.
Mm. In
it doesn't happen that often.
Right. Right. But there are, and also though, Kevin, there are, the 1 seed doesn't always make it there. Like what we're with the mix, the great thing about hockey is teams can kind of come out of nowhere.
True. I think we'll be okay. I think we'll be fine.
Hey, Kevin, thank you for the call and thank you for that stat.
I think we're going to be okay. I mean, we
learned something new.
Yeah. We just can't have the panic button. And I think that you kind of alluded to it earlier. We have to be playing our best hockey going into the playoffs. And if we're playing our best hockey going into the playoffs, I think the Predators are going to be just fine.
Yeah, how about that? How about that? Kevin with the good stat.
I know, that's a good stat. 16.
That is. The only 8-seed other than make it.
But you said something earlier, too, that, it doesn't matter where you get in, long as you get in.
Yeah, no, I think.
0-0. That's a great point.
Yeah.
0-0.
I think, especially in hockey, I feel like with that. And I mean, how many good teams? I've seen a bunch of good hockey teams get toppled. Yeah. The Blackhawks were supposed to be invincible, and the Preds swept them when they were the 8. So, I mean, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
Just getting in.
It's
just like when the Baltimore Ravens beat us. You know they barely made the playoffs?
Yeah.
But the thing about it is once they got in, they were playing better football than anybody else. And they just ran through they beat us. I hate to say that. Then they went and beat the Raiders, and they went and beat the Giants in the Super Bowl. So it just shows you the team is hot, the team is playing good ball at that time, and hockey or in every sport is going to have a chance to put their position to win ball games.
Did you like a bye in the NFL playoffs? Okay.
I hated it. Does
anybody like that?
No, I mean, some people like it. Some people are like, well, I want to get some rest. But if you get some rest, you got to remember, just like what Baltimore did, they came and they were hot. So we were trying to adjust on the run while they were running on all cylinders. Right. When they're running on all cylinders and we're making mistakes, we're having blocked field goals and we're, guys dropping passes and they're hitting us in the mouth, I'm telling you, man, that gets the momentum in every single game.
Feel like you lose a little bit of your edge.
The speed of the game changes. Even though you think, well, it's just a week, but you got to remember they're getting that extra week of playing fast. And when you come in a game and they're playing fast and you're trying to catch up, that's a recipe for disaster.
Let it be known. Chris Sanders, not a fan of bye weeks.
Heck no.
No, well, bye weeks during the season, Chris Sanders, big fan of. Playoff bye weeks, Chris Sanders, not a fan of.
No, heck no. I would rather just play through. If you look at when we went to the Super Bowl, we play Buffalo Bills. We didn't have a bye. We had Buffalo Bills. We had Indy. We had Jacksonville. We were rolling. After we beat Buffalo Bills, I was like, we going to the Super Bowl because we were playing our best ball at that time.
What kind of, obviously Music City Miracle for those of you that don't, what does a play like that do to energize a team? I mean, do you feel like at that point when you see that happen, do you kind of feel like this is our season?
You know what? When we walked in the locker room after the Music City Miracle happened, when you look at all the guys, we're energized. We couldn't wait to go play Indianapolis.
Yeah.
That just shows you that we were on a team on a mission. We were happy about the Music City Miracle, but there was just a different look in those guys' eyes. Jeff Fisher had a different look. Javon Kurse had a different look. Eddie George had a different look. Steve McNair had a different look. You had guys say, you know what? We got some dogs in here. Right. We're getting ready to go bite. And that was the difference for us going to Indianapolis and beating a great Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
And then going to Jacksonville. And I hate to say this, Jacksonville had the better team. You had Tony Boselli. They had some great receivers, all those guys. But, man, we came in there with a chip on our shoulder. Be like, you know what? We come in here and we're taking what's ours. And that's what made the difference.
You're like, we've already won too. So
yeah, come on with that.
Did you guys see the Music City Miracle? 15 minutes through. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be talking Titans draft targets.
Let's go.
When we get back on the second section of the show here. Joe Leadingham, Chris Sanders filling in for Michaels and Mueller. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Just got asked to fill in. We don't know where they are.
I don't know.
But I'm glad we did. Because I haven't seen you in a while, buddy.
I know, man. Good to see you, bud.
Approaching
Bob,
the draft.
Bob, when he works the 10 o'clock and it's at 8 o'clock, he can't come in.
Oh, okay. There we go. So Ryan A. Mudd, did that just go out on the broadcast? Did people hear that?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. That is Ryan A. Mudd behind the glass telling us exactly what's happening. I wonder if Bob's listening right now.
Bob, we missed the stage.
Bob, hopefully we're not blowing it here.
No, we're doing good, man.
Yes, sir. So we're going to move on. We talked a little bit about hockey. We talked a little Titans. We're going to continue with a little Titans talk.
Sure.
Listen, and here's my question. I know that there's a lot of good free agents out there.
Right.
I guess your thoughts on, do you pay a lot of money to bring in a guy? I just feel like teams that are successful build from the draft. More so?
I mean, I know a lot of fans are going and try to get all the big name people, but the reason why they're not on those other teams is because there's a reason.
Right.
There's a reason.
Right.
Because if they were world beaters, which they probably are in their prime, but the reason why they're not on their team is because there's a reason why they're not there. So you got to put that in perspective. And then you don't want to just get anybody. You want to get somebody that's a good fit for your organization, that's a good fit for your team, that a good fit for your culture, and that's what you build up. Don't just get caught up in the sexy name.
Right.
Get caught up in this a good fit for our team.
I'll tell you this. So last year, last offseason, I had all these people. It just, Ndamukong Suh, oh my gosh, top defensive tackle in the league. It's crazy if they don't go after him. And I was like, look, guys, if he was the top defensive tackle in the league, A, he wouldn't be available.
There you
okay?
go.
I mean, just he wouldn't be. And B, well, I don't really have a B, but he wouldn't be available.
Yeah.
B, the team would keep him.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it is. Yeah.
I mean,
so
you want to make sure you get somebody that still, I'm not saying they can't play, but that's going to bring an impact to your team.
Yeah.
You don't just want to get a name. You want to make sure that when he comes in, that he's a wrecking ball, whatever position he plays, that he's an impact and you feel him on the field.
So, with that being said, Chris Sanders, he's an impact and you feel him on the field. Uh-huh. Antonio Brown. And I know that you, before the show, listen, Chris Sanders wants to talk about this because apparently he's told, and I've heard it too, but apparently that's what everyone's talking about. Right. And I get it. I've heard it too. But Antonio Brown, yes or no?
I would say no. I mean, I want to paint a picture for what I'm talking about because I know Antonio Brown. The reason why I'm being careful by saying this is because I respect his craft.
Yeah, he's good.
Players,
good player.
He's good. He makes plays. But you want to bring a guy in here that's a team player. And I want to paint the picture. Just imagine if it's 3rd and 5 and he throws it to Corey Davis and he doesn't throw it to Antonio Brown. And Antonio Brown comes back and cusses Mariota when he's not playing well. How is that going to go well? See, it goes more than just being a great player. You got to be a great teammate. You got to be coachable. You got to listen to the coaching staff. You got to listen to the offensive coordinator. You got to listen to people. You can't go around kicking Gatorade bottles. You can't go around cussing at your head coach. You got to make sure you got to be a good fit in every area of your ball club.
Speaking of that, and listen, it looked to me this last year that, you know, I mean, it looked like he was talking to Ben Roethlisberger. And if you're talking to a quarterback that's got 2 Super Bowl championships, what do you think you're saying to a guy that doesn't have any, at least not right now?
It's just like this. Just imagine we building a cake. We're making a cake, right? We added all the ingredients. We got our yeast. We got our eggs. We got all this stuff. and then you take it out and you got this nice cake and then you put ketchup on it. That's not the right ingredient. The thing about it is, John Robinson.
That's a great ketchup is on a cake. It just sounds terrible.
But then now you got John Robinson who's building this great cake. You got some key players. You got Logan. You got Butler. You get your now you're getting your offense. You got Corey Davis. You got Henry that's playing well. You got all these great ingredients. What happens if you add the wrong ingredient? Just like the picture of that cake.
Yeah.
It's going to mess up everything, even though the cake looks pretty. But if you put ketchup on it, it's going to mess everything up.
So you're saying a hard no.
Heck no.
Yeah.
I wouldn't touch it.
I'm a firm believer in you build through the draft. That's just kind of what I think. I mean, and you get to identify guys that, yeah. you know, you get fresh. I look at it as a blank canvas. Mm-hmm, you get mm-hmm. a guy, obviously, that's coming from the college game. Nobody's messed with them yet. You get to bring him in. You get to mold him the way you want to play with him. Now, look, those don't all pan out.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they did, then everyone would still be keeping their jobs. Yeah. That's just the way it goes.
Yeah.
But I keep looking at these big contracts and free mm-hmm. agents that people mm-hmm. have brought in. And I just feel like they're never as good as is in any sport.
Right.
They're never as good as they sound when you bring these guys in.
I mean, look at it. Look, I know I keep going back to 1999, but if you look at it in 1997, in 1998, we had a core leader. We had core guys on leadership. We had Eddie George. We had Steve McNair. We had Bruce Matthews. We had all those guys on offense. Then we get on defense. You have Joe Bowden, Baron Wortham, all these guys. All of a sudden, you add a Javon Curse and a Samari Rowe.
Yeah.
Changes everything. And we went through the draft, and you just add those pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And when you add those one or two pieces, it's not getting it's not revamping your whole team. You want to have your set leaders, keep Woodyard, keep those guys that's on there, Jarrell Casey, and just add a couple of more pieces. Get an edge rusher that is just like a Curse. Get maybe a safety that can help Byard out a little bit. I mean, now you're creating your masterpiece through the draft.
I'm going to ask you this question and put you on the spot right
sure.
now. Okay. How many guys do you think lose motivation once they get paid? Now, let me say this sure. too. And I'm not saying when they get paid by the team that originally uh-huh. drafted them. I'm saying guys that become so big mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden they get a huge payday from yeah. another team. Mm-hmm. And we've seen it time and time again. I would love a great example of someone who got paid a big contract uh-huh. and then outperformed what they did for their prior team. I can't think of one off the top. If someone has any idea, I mean, even just a couple would be great. But how much motivation do you think guys lose when they get the big contract?
The one guy that I can definitely say that played every play, and this is Eddie George.
Yeah.
Eddie George got a big contract, but he played every single play. I remember I did a
speech. And I'll say, sorry, I'm not to stop your story here, but I want to hear what you're going to say here, but that's, you know, Eddie was drafted by yeah. that team and yeah. then got paid by
and
that team.
Paid.
I feel like that's a better situation uh-huh. than a guy that gets drafted by a team, yeah, but then gets point. Paid by another team. That's mm-hmm. the kind of thing I'm talking about. So continue with the story, sorry, yeah. then we can go back
you
to
know,
that.
I remember I did a speaking engagement with Chris Holt one time, and I'm sitting there speaking, then he got up and speaking. He said these words, and it shook me to the core. He said, "Why, when I dreamt about playing in the NFL, when I dreamt about catching a touchdown, or I dreamt about making an interception in the NFL, I get there and I stop working." Yeah. It all depends on the individual.
Mm-hmm.
Why would I do that? It all depends on the person. If I got a whole bunch of money and I got a big contract, why would I stop working? I would work even harder to get to where I need to get
right.
to prove that I'm worth that money, to prove that I'm a great player, to prove that I can do these things that you paid me for. And there's not too many guys that are like that.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes when people get paid, their focus shifts to, I got to get a bigger car.
Mm-hmm.
I got to get the bigger diamond. So now if your focus shift, then your play shift, as opposed to being a team player, now you become a me player.
Yeah. And now that you've brought up another topic, me players.
Yeah.
I think you're a wide receiver, so I'm not dissing the position, but right. a lot of your fellow position right. guys are divas.
Yeah.
That's just and I get it. Yeah. With the catches that they make and right. they're big play guys.
Right.
And big play guys have to have an attitude. True. I understand that. But, you know, there's a lot of me guys out
yeah,
there. Are
is.
There not?
You know, in 1999, we had some great receivers, and we had usually a team keeps five receivers. We kept seven. That's how many great receivers we had. But we had seven guys in that room that had an I don't care attitude.
Right.
I don't care if you catch five balls. I don't care if you catch two touchdowns. My focus is I want to win. Like, just say if I'm in Atlanta game, one game I caught seven for 105. The next game I caught one. The next game, Kevin Dyson caught some. The next one, Derek Mason. Next one, Isaac Bird. Next one, some other guys caught some balls. We didn't care.
Yeah.
Our vision was getting to the Super Bowl. Our vision was winning the championship. And if you can get a whole bunch of guys like the New England Patriots do, they don't. Edelman don't care how many balls he catch. He just wants to win ball games. That's the culture that you got to build.
Yeah, and it's tough.
It's tough.
Winning cures all.
Winning cures all.
I feel like people become a lot less selfish when you start winning games.
You know, but it all depends on where your heart is at.
Yeah.
If your heart is to get that Lamborghini, that's great. I mean, I want a Lamborghini.
But yeah.
That's not my main focus. My main focus is winning a championship, and then I'll go buy a Lamborghini.
Yeah, you then know? Everybody gets paid.
Yeah,
right?
Then everybody gets paid.
We're going to talk a little bit more about free agents.
Sure.
I want some more Antonio Brown thoughts when we get back. Second segment of Mackles and Mueller. We're going to wrap that up. We're going to be back with more Titans talk. If you callers, call in. We'd love to hear from you. Mackles and Mueller, we'll be right back.
We did some stuff this year, right?
Like right at the beginning of the season. Oh, okay, cool, summertime. Cool. Maybe it's like, yeah, maybe it has been that long.
Yeah, man. How you doing? Like Chris, five. Nice to meet you, bud.
Oh, I know who you are.
Well, hey,
and so do these listeners.
Oh,
and
man,
before the break, Chris Sanders does not want Antonio Brown. And neither does Joe Leadingham.
No.
I don't. I feel like they've got something going. Look, they may get him. Who knows?
I mean, don't be surprised if New England jumps on them or Indianapolis Colts jump on them. I mean,
is it crazy to you to see that all these guys? Listen, I like Randy Moss as a player,
I
think he's good on TV.
He's very good.
I don't think he's the same guy as he was when he played in the NFL.
Right.
But he was a hothead, and all of a sudden he goes to New England and has like the greatest season ever with Tom Brady, and it's like, how do the Patriots keep doing this? They keep just pulling guys that have issues and then making them into team players.
We always talk about a culture, and when we throw that word around all the time, and everybody's like, well, what does culture mean? It means, you know, it's a habit or doing things over and over a certain way. And if you don't do it the certain way, you don't want to create a habit of doing it their way, then you're out of here. And I think that if you have if the team has an expectation of this is the vision, this is the goal, this is where we're going, and it's just like a train. You can get off or you can stay on. And I just think that that's what they relate to the players when they come in. And the one thing that they do is they get players that are hungry, you know, that teams don't want. I mean, look at Edelman. He was a quarterback coming out of college.
Yeah.
So you don't think he's hungry?
Mm.
You don't think those wide receivers, you don't think Hogan, a guy that nobody wanted, he got cut from Buffalo, you don't think he's hungry? You remember when they got Dylan? The running back from Cincinnati, Corey Dillon, he was hungry.
Look at all the running backs are rolling through now. Rex Burkhead.
Blunt.
James White. Yeah, I mean, all these guys.
But they all adapted to their culture.
Yeah, they've all been successful. I just have a personal question.
Sure.
We're going to go back.
Please.
How much do you, and my girlfriend was you know, giving me some grief about this the other day, because she's like, you know what, the one thing I don't miss about you talking about, you know, not doing TV sports anymore? Yeah. Is how you come home and be like, this is a must-win game this week. She's like, aren't they all must-wins? Like, I'm just tired of it. She's like, I don't want you to ever say it again unless it's actually a must-win game. Do you guys get tired of hearing about that stuff when you're just like, oh, it's a must-win game every week?
No, me and my girlfriend, we talk about sports a lot. I mean, I converted her into a Ohio State fan. She's an Alabama fan. I mean, she's screaming and all this.
Oh, so she loves herself.
She loves Alabama. But we talk about football, and she knows that I coach football, so we talk about those things. And so it's a win-win situation.
Mm. But is it a must-win game?
I say that every doggone week.
You really?
I say it every week.
Do you tell it to your kids, your coach, hey, this is a must-win game?
I don't really tell my kids that
because
I don't want to put pressure on them. Be like, man, we're just going to go out and we're going to beat the brakes off them. That's just kind of the expectation that I expect that they do. I mean, with the kids that I coach, they're not the fastest, they're not the biggest, they're not the strongest, but I make them think that they can go out and win every single game.
Yeah. I'm only allowed to talk about must-win games now if it's to get to the playoffs or if it's a playoff game.
Every game is a must-win.
Because that's what my girlfriend was like, yo, those are actually must-win games.
Right.
Like, you know, when you're in the playoffs, it's a must-win.
It's a must-win.
And I was like, okay, I got it. She's like, so all this stuff about, you know, it could be a must-win game. She's like, no, you're not. You're only allowed to talk about must-win games when they're actually a must-win.
But are we saying that about the Predators with 21 games left? Are those must-win games?
No. So I think I'd have to look at the they're comfortably in the four spot right now, but I have to look at the rest of those. But they're not. I'll tell you this, buddy. They're not all must win games.
Yeah, I mean,
probably a handful of them are must win games.
Yeah, but just like you said, you got to be playing good ball when you're going into the playoffs. Because if you don't, you can end up like with us, just sitting there, you know, not having a Super Bowl ring instead of getting that Stanley Cup.
Don't get sad over there.
I'm getting my lips poked out.
I don't like it. I don't like a sad Chris Sanders. I don't.
No, man, that brings back memories, man. I want to fight Ray Lewis. But he might win.
You think you win?
Heck no.
Oh, I thought you said, okay.
Man, I'm a lover, not a fighter.
Man, and Ray's scary.
Oh, was that? But you know what? You know what I respect about him is, you know, I've been around a lot of great leaders, a lot of great men, but he's one of the best leaders I've ever been around.
Right.
He was on opposing teams. You know, I remember we were playing him in Baltimore, and I caught a deep ball against one of their defensive backs. And he sprinted down the field. Instead of yelling at him and telling what he didn't do, he grabbed him by the face mask. He said, dude, we got a long game. Just get on my back and follow me.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there like, man, let me take out my jersey. Let me be on your team.
Yeah.
Because he made his player better as opposed to just cussing him out.
I tell you right now, I think that's definitely something you can look at as those leaders are just,
yeah.
You know, there's a time and a place, I think.
Well, let me ask you this question. You think LeBron James is a great leader?
Ooh.
Ooh, come on with it, big dog.
Ooh, you know what? I'm gonna say no, okay. At least right now. Mm-hmm. And I only say that. And look, he's good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure yet. And I only say I just look at what happened. Listen, I think a great leader would have had his team, give a much better effort. And the last two times he left Cleveland, he just looked so unattached, and he looked like he just, I mean, if you're that great of a leader, motivate your guys to put up a fight.
See, you just said the key word, motivate.
Yeah.
Remember the play where, what's the guy who called timeout?
Chris Webber?
No.
College?
No, from college. I mean from their, Cleveland.
Remember? Oh, J.R. Smith?
J.R. Smith, when he called timeout.
And LeBron lost it.
LeBron lost it.
Yeah.
That's not the time to be degrading your player on national TV.
Yeah.
All you got to do is say, listen, we're going to overtime. Let's go win this thing.
Yeah.
And listen, I respect LeBron James as a leader. I respect him as a person. I respect his game. But in that instant, you did not make your player better. You make your player better. But I'm not talking about calling him, say, hey, little buddy. Hey, little Johnny. You grab him by a shirt. Hey, big dog. We're going to overtime. I expect you to make that shot. I expect you. You don't think that dude would have had the confidence to shoot? When he got the ball, he was ready to pass it because he wasn't sure, because the leader of the team said, you know what? I'm not sure you can.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you at all.
Man.
I mean, I really don't. And listen, that Cavaliers team, not talented. That's just the bottom line. So I get it. You're LeBron. You're in a situation where you're looking around like, man, I got a bunch of scrubs.
Yep.
It's me and a bunch of dudes out here. But I get why. But that doesn't matter. If you're and there's always that, you know, there's the Jordan LeBron comparison,
uh-huh.
And there's always the, I mean, everyone says it's not like, you know, some people talk about Jordan like it was Jordan and a bunch of scrubs.
No,
going to the, you know, winning all. It's like, no, but he did, I think, for the most part, get a lot out of his players.
Look at when
he got more out of his players than I think LeBron gets out of his.
But you ever see Jordan going and make faces of his players, be like, you know, have that gas face, like you missed a shot.
No,
look at what he did with Kerr. Everybody, I can't remember the year where Kerr made the winning shot.
Mm-hmm.
And Jordan was dribbling the ball, whatever. I think it was like 15 seconds left on the clock. And everybody thought that Jordan was going to shoot the ball. He stops. He passes to Kerr. Kerr shoots it. Swish. He shared the spotlight with Kerr to let him be the guy. And I just think that's what great leadership is making making others better.
And winning.
Yeah, and winning.
And look, LeBron has won a ton. And it's hard to say that because, look, what is it, 9 straight years in the finals? I mean, so you got to be somewhat of a leader to get your team to the finals that many years in a row.
Yeah, but were those guys scrubs if you make it to the finals? I mean, they're not scrubs.
Is LeBron that good? Has he been that good? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when you... I mean,
but he has been in the East, so let's just, you know.
Yeah.
He has been in the East, and up until...
What's one of the best leaders you've ever been around or ever... seen or ever witnessed? One of the best leaders you've seen?
One of the best leaders? Man,
yeah.
that's a tough one. Mm-hmm. I'd have to really think. Well, you go first and let me think.
No, you go first.
No, I can't do that. I got to think about right now one of the best.
I think one of the unsung heroes in 1999 was Lorenzo Neal.
Ooh.
Lorenzo Neal. He was our fullback. He didn't get recognition. All he did was just bloody his nose and block for Eddie.
Mm-hmm.
That and this guy was. I mean, we were playing the Pittsburgh Steelers, and Eddie George got hurt. And if you know Lorenzo Neal, he was a wrestler, short guy with no neck, and he could bench press 275 like 26 times.
Yeah.
So he saw Eddie George get hurt. Instead of saying, "Man, you're soft, you're weak," he said this, and he had a high voice. He said, "Hey, Eddie, hey, just get on my back and follow me."
Is that how he sounds?
That's how he talks. Hey, 827, let's go, baby. That's how he talks. And he...
I can't handle that voice. I can't handle that voice.
And he was running through people. Didn't get no recognition, didn't get nothing. And that's one of the best leaders I've ever been around, Lorenzo Neal.
Lorenzo Neal. Okay.
Unbelievable.
I see.
Eddie, come on, 27.
I think you should do an entire show in the Lorenzo Neal voice.
Come on, 27, let's go, baby. We're about to rock and roll, baby. Hey, 9, let's go. You know it's on.
He doesn't seem like he'd have that voice.
But he will run through you with the quickness.
Oh.
And you remember when we did the Music City Miracle?
Yeah.
In practice, he couldn't catch a cold. He couldn't catch anything.
Mm-hmm.
But when the lights were on and it was time to make a play, who caught the ball when it was kicked off? Lorenzo Neal.
Yeah.
Lorenzo Neal, then he threw it to who? Watch it, gave it to Dyson, but it all started with Lorenzo Neal.
Yeah, it's a good one. That wasn't who I thought you were gonna bring up. I'm gonna have my leader example on the backside of this break. It is 8:44. Final segment of Michaels and Mueller coming up. Joe Leadingham, Chris Sanders. We'll be right back. Talk about that before we get in. Yeah, at the end of the break here. I'm sorry, I'm losing my train of thought. Chris challenged me to give an example of the best leader. I don't really haven't known any good leaders. So
somebody call in and see if they can call in.
I would get like Joe Montana maybe because I'm a Niners fan and he was like, I never saw him getting down on guys. He'd always like lift guys up. I think that's probably you got to do. Hey, speaking of leadership, Marcus Mariota.
Yeah.
I like his leadership style. It seems like. And, you know, he's not very vocal, and I think that hurts him with fans in a little bit of a way because he's not like one of these electric, you know, personalities. But, I mean, look, I think the guys respect him.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they'd break their necks and their backs for him.
But, you know, if you look at Steve McNair, Steve McNair didn't say a lot of stuff. He was asleep before the game. I mean, he was asleep.
Did you tell me that? He would take these naps?
He would take a nap. So it's not about how much noise you make. It's about making noise in your playmaking. That's the key, is making noise. I mean, anybody would follow a Steve McNair or Eddie George because their play backed it up.
Yeah.
And even Eddie just had a look. Eddie didn't say that much.
Yeah.
I mean, he'll get hype once in a while, but Eddie didn't say that much. He's like, I'm going to run through your face, and that's going to speak louder than the words that I say.
It's going to show my team what they need to do, too.
There you go. I mean, I remember we were playing the Dallas Cowboys, and Steve McNair, you know, ran the ball and got tackled, and his finger was pointing the other way.
Mm-hmm.
So he's calling the play in the huddle, and we're like, man, you know, we need to call timeout. He said, no, I'm good. He called the play, and as he walked up to the center to get the ball, he popped it back in socket. And then ran for 46 yards for a touchdown.
Oh, man.
That's a cat that I'm going to follow. He didn't say a word. He just went and ran the ball.
Right. Mm. you know what? Last couple minutes, I don't know if you've been following college. Have you followed much college basketball this year?
A little bit. I just know them balls.
Yeah. I mean, but listen, I just want to touch on it real quick. It was something I saw. The Vols lost to Kentucky. Now, listen, they got punched in the face. There's no doubt. But did anybody think that was not going to be the case? I mean, Kentucky had taken a loss at home to LSU. They hadn't lost two in a row since, I mean, who knows when. And, I mean, it was just set up for Tennessee to lose that game. But speaking of a good leader, this is what brings you to it. I think Rick Barnes is a good leader.
Okay, yeah.
That's a guy who's a good leader. I mean, he's turned that program around in no time. But here's my main question for you.
Yes.
The Vols dropped from number one to number five, and Kentucky jumps ahead of them.
I think that's good.
Do you think that should have happened? I know that you do?
Yeah, and I'm
because they hadn't lost a game in like 80 something days. They were on the road at Kentucky, and in a really just you knew they were probably going to lose.
Right. I would rather be number five than number one. The reason why I say that is because when you're number one, everybody's gunning
for you. Yeah, sure.
Everybody's gunning for you. So just ease into the March Madness and go and win some ball games, because if you're number one, everybody's gunning for you, and one of those teams, and there's gonna be one in their bracket. Somebody's gonna lose because everybody's gunning for you.
I think if they, I think if they win that game, though, Kentucky, I think they've got a really good shot at being the one seed or being a one seed. Yeah. I mean, even if they stumbled massively, I still think if they win that game on the road, they've got a really probably a one at some point. Yeah.
Here's what I love about the Vols. When they were down by 30, I looked at their body language. Nobody quit.
Yeah.
That's impressive right there because, you know, a mature team is going to fight. A team that's not mature is going to pout and say, oh, we lowered down by 30. They're a mature team because they fought back and made it kind of close as opposed to getting beat by 30. So I think that's a sign of a mature team.
Speaking of a mature team, you talk about immaturity. I heard a little bit of Calipari after the game, and he was like yelling at dudes, and they're like, and, you know, he's like, you know, well, coach, we're still up 12. He's like, yeah, but we're up 24 like 3 minutes ago.
They say, yeah, we're up 12.
That's what he was saying in his press conference. He's like, my guys are just young and they don't get it. But, we're still up 12. And he's like, yo, we were up 24. It's a 12-point game. Like, there's still a shot here.
Yeah.
Let's figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, a mature team is going to put you away like that. I mean, going back to football, look at New England. If they're up by 70, they're going to still go and spread offense and still try to and still do what they do. Yeah. That's a mature team.
I'm wondering, I'm not an NBA talent scout or a basketball talent evaluator. I am curious to know, the Vols are, it's a foregone conclusion. They're in the tournament in a really great seat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested to see what happens when Grant Williams matches up with an elite type of player, because I think at some point he probably will. Now, from what I've seen from Grant Williams, I think he's a really good college player.
Yeah.
NBA guy that can guard NBA talent. I don't know, so that's what I'm looking forward to seeing.
You know who's just a grown man out there? That dude from Duke. What's that kid's name?
Zion Williamson.
He is grown. The only thing I'm concerned about him is when he gets in the NBA, is he going to gain more weight? That dude's 285, man.
Yeah.
Is he going to get 300 pounds? If he gets 300 bills and dunk in front of the free throw line, you got a monster on your hand.
Yeah.
Because he's going to gain weight. Now, he's got to get a nutritionist to make sure he's eating well and make sure his body stays slim and his body fat's got to be low. But if that joker is 285 now and he's a freshman, just imagine what he's going to be in 2 or 3 years. Look at Shaq when he came in the league. He was big, but then he got bigger. So
I thought skinny Shaq was way better than big Shaq.
I thought big Shaq was a little better.
Well, big Shaq, I was wondering how people guarded big Shaq.
I remember I saw him when we went to the Citrus Bowl. When I was at Ohio State, we played in the Citrus Bowl. And I saw him he just got picked up by Orlando. And I saw him. I'm like, who's that tall dude? I mean, everybody's around him, and he was this tall dude. They said, that's Shaquille O'Neal. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
He's a grown man. Grown man. He's a grown man.
He's not small.
He's not a small dude.
Let's put that out there. But look, kids these days are a lot bigger. You know that.
Yeah. I mean, we're big crazy. Too.
Yeah. Is that right? I mean, I'm 6'2", but
I'm barely 6 feet.
I was one of the biggest kids on my team, and or on my high school football team. I went to a smaller school, but now, I mean, I played DN tight end. I mean, I'm small for that position these days.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I'm serious.
You play what?
DN tight end.
Whoa, you must be real. Did you have the one bar face mask?
No. No, I should have, though. That would have been tight.
Oh, man.
But no, look, I never was very good. But, I mean, I'm just saying I was one of the bigger guys on the field. And this is back in 2001, 2000. And now, I mean, I just look at the kids from incredible. High school football today, and I'm just like, man, there's no way I could be a defensive end or a tight end at my height and my size. There's no way I could have played that position today in high school. I would have to gain 30 pounds at least.
You know how much I weighed graduating from high school? 142 pounds.
Are you kidding me?
And my freshman,
and they gave you a scholarship to play for
them. I know, from Ohio State. I was real long. I was real long and I was real fast.
Right.
But I mean, I was skinny. I mean, I weighed 142 pounds. I wrestled in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, when I wrestled my freshman year, I weighed 112 pounds. I was gross.
That's not good. You look good now, though. You look
muscular. I
got to
get my guns on, big daddy.
You need to get those guns on. Any final thoughts here as we get ready to wrap up the show?
Number one, with the Predators, just relax. I mean, just kind of recap what we're talking about. With the Predators, don't panic. I think they're going to be all right. Make sure you get involved in the NFL draft this year. I think it's going to be very, very exciting. And I think whoever they pick is going to be big for the city.
I'm calling and hopefully we'll get to host the show again before the
Let's
draft.
Let's do it, man.
I'm calling there's going to be a big move by the Titans before the draft.
Ooh.
So I'm just going to go ahead and throw that out there. And again, I've said this on multiple radio shows for a long time. The Preds are winning the Stanley Cup this year. I'm not jinxing anything. I said it 2 years ago. I'm sticking to it. I wish everyone would just calm down.
Calm down.
Right now, they're going to be fine. They're going to be fine. This is the year.
Yeah?
Yes.
They're going to do it.
Yes.
They got to be playing good hockey.
They are going to, this is, I'm telling you right now, barring a catastrophic injury or multiple injuries, this is going to be the year for the
Predators. They got to play ball now because every team's going to be gunning for them.
Yeah, but I think they're fine. I think they're good enough to win.
I mean, I agree with you 100%. I mean, that first line has been playing well.
Yeah.
The second and third line, those are the lines that got to play well.
Last thing, and then we're going to get out of here. Way too early season prediction for the Titans next season.
I think they have the potential to go 11-5.
Wow.
I think they have the potential. Because all they got to do is add a couple of pieces. Defense was top 10. Offense was pretty good. The running game has improved, but I think overall they need a big time receiver.
11-5 before the draft. I like that you have an idea. Like your mind is already like five chess moves ahead now, thinking about, okay, here's what they could do in the draft. I like him to go possibly.
They're just a couple of players away. I mean, everybody talked about the pass rush they didn't have, but you get a dog like Javon Kurse. You know, a lot of players out there from Clemson. Get a guy from Clemson or Mississippi State or even a guy from Florida.
Yeah.